With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Welcome back to The Remote Life. My name is Han Torbert, also known as Han Leeds Wild, and today we'll be chatting with Spencer van der Staren. Originally from Canada, Spencer is the creative behind Take Your Seat, where his iconic director's chair appears in breathtaking locations from Hong Kong mountaintops to Mediterranean shores. In this episode, we dive into the creative process behind his signature concept, the untold challenges of building a creative business on the road, and what mindful content creation means in today's world. So grab a coffee, a tea, or something stronger, and let's get started. Spencer, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you so much. I am good. I feel like maybe all of your guests should start with, you know, how they are, but where they are. I'm currently in Toronto. Yeah, I'm currently in Toronto, Canada, getting ready for a big trip. I've been in Montreal most recently before this, enjoying some time at home before yet another big push on the road. So I'm doing great, and I'm at home for now, but literally tomorrow evening on a flight to faraway places.
That's so exciting. And I just want to give some context. The last time we saw each other, we were both in Berlin for ITB, and it's so exciting to catch up now and see what you're up to. So yeah, can't wait.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. People that are kind of in this space, you know, a lot happens in a few months. That was only March. And, you know, for you and I, and I think some of the other people that we crossed paths with in Berlin, that I've kept in touch with, it's like, wow, you know, that's a pretty full life. That's a very exciting time. Yeah. And so even in a pretty short period, especially now as weather is getting better in the Northern Hemisphere, I think people are that much more excited and travel seems that much more top of mind for people again.
Yeah, it's been a whole season of shenanigans, 100%. Yeah. Well, why don't you dive straight, just without further ado, tell us about you and your remote life journey so far.
Yeah, please. Yeah. So I suppose I'll tell the story and then the individual listener can decide when it starts to constitute remote life. High school, I played very serious baseball and I was living out of a backpack on a bus with my team for, you know, 3 or 4 years during high school. And even before that, whether it was hockey or baseball, we were traveling a lot, mostly in Canada and the States. So I was already kind of getting comfortable with this idea of living out of a small suitcase or a backpack, not always in the most comfortable setting. Certainly far from home for long times. And so for me, that's where I would say it started. That did lead to me going to play baseball in California and coming from Toronto. That's quite a distance from California. I said, you know what? We're not quite far enough away yet. And then I moved to Tokyo, Japan, and spent 7 months there. So there's another big checkpoint, right? Where you go, wow, okay. You know, and somehow my homework's getting done. You know, my personal projects are getting done. The company that we'll talk about today, the project, that was actually in full swing at that time as well. And so it was really nice to start to get these glimpses of, wait a minute, you know, I'm really enjoying where I am and I get to be very intentional about that. And life's not falling apart and, you know, and the grades are doing okay and work's going well. I went back to California for a little bit and said, you know what? What if I did another exchange program and I went to Paris?
Wow.
And that was, you know, equally in its own way, but, you know, equally dreamy, just incredible experiences and another chance to prove to myself that it's totally possible. And then, pretty much right away after university, it was right in the middle of COVID. So there was a pause where I had to come home and just be safe for my sake, my family, and for the sake of the world. But yeah, once it was safe again, all of a sudden it was Athens. It was Mexico. I had worked projects in places like Thailand and Korea and often stopping in Istanbul. Yeah, just it's a long list and the places are obviously each incredible, but the constant would be I'm still living out of a backpack. I just moved out of much longer than normal and certainly longer than the ones I've just previously mentioned. But I just finished a 7-month lease in Montreal, and I moved out with a large duffel bag and a backpack on of my apartment.
Wow.
So, you know, that's the through line from those baseball trips in high school to now. I'm 27 now. I've lived in a lot of really spectacular places. Some places that have great names. You know, Mexico City is wonderful. I can't say the place I was living in that exact instance was wonderful. Yeah, depending on how much detail you look at them, it can change. But the through line there is definitely the laptop, the backpack, passport, thankfully, is a good one. And not too much else, you know? And I think that when you say to a friend or you meet somebody at a party, oh, you know, I'm bouncing around. I move around a lot. Or I'm a digital nomad, however you want to phrase it. It can feel to them, the reaction is one of like, that sounds overwhelming. How could you do that? You know, I feel very fortunate that it's been many years. It's been almost all of my adult years of doing it. And I feel very comfortable with it.
Do you think that having like that baseball background helped you to kind of take on this lifestyle? Kind of for me, doing the study abroad, living abroad while I was a kid for a bit, it definitely felt way less overwhelming in a way because I'd already experienced it and knew generally what my process was into those things.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that it gave me a chance to develop systems for myself of, you know, just organization, like, you know, making sure you have all your equipment, making sure your clothes are clean, you know, making sure you're ready to go on the bus at 7 a.m. the next morning, or, you know, getting to practice at a certain time, getting a chance, you know, relatively low stakes. I suppose if you miss the bus and you're driving to Florida, that's quite a problem, but, you know, fairly low stakes. Thankfully, it never happened. I was able to get those systems going fairly quickly. And then that kind of organization, including some of the literal tools, you know, at that time I was using Google Calendar to the same degree that I am today, you know, to organize my time. Yeah, those systems I've carried with me throughout. And there's maybe a level of discipline as well that comes with them. You know, the systems are only as effective as, you know, as you are consistent. Yeah.
That's one of the things I think people, sorry, not to cut you off completely there, but I do think that people don't realize that when, in order to have like this air quote freedom lifestyle, there is so much more discipline involved into that, whether it's going freelance, whether it's taking on a remote life, whether it's starting a business, starting anything for yourself that you want to see through. There's so much discipline involved that you maybe didn't have. And it doesn't mean I didn't feel like I had that as much where I was full-time employed and based somewhere.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's a certain cutting back in certain areas in order to have that feeling of freedom in the more important to you areas. It's obviously, we've decided it's a worthy trade-off. That's something that's, you know, always up for debate, of course, and everyone's going to have their own stance. And I hope that stance is not solid. You know, in my sake, it's something I'm reevaluating all the time. And if anybody was questioning coming from a more stationary lifestyle and considering digital nomadism, you can change your mind about what's important and which freedoms you're willing to trade off for, right? So, and likewise, for some people, I think they maybe stick with it for too long and try to force it to work. But you can change your mind too, right?
That's why this podcast is called The Remote Life and not The Digital Nomad Life, because everyone lives differently. That it's about designing your life. Oh, well, obviously, we're going to chat more about Take Your Seat. Tell us more. What is it? Who is it for? How did it come to be?
Yeah, I mean, the segue is perfect. Designing your life is a pretty clear way to lead into it. So Take Your Seat is an art project. It's primarily photography and storytelling, writing. It's the ongoing journey of a director's chair. And so it's a red and white director's chair, a literal piece of furniture that we fold up and put in our suitcase. And we take it all around the world and take photos of it. And that could be, you know, at a street food stand in Hong Kong, or it could be center stage at some incredible concert hall in a big city. It could be in the mountains. We've had it whale watching. You know, we've had it deep in the jungle. It's always the same chair. It's always real. It's never Photoshopped. And so if you see it on top of a mountain, you know, in Lao, for example, that was a tough hike to get that director's chair up to the top of the mountain with our camera gear and take that picture. When I say our, or, you know, it's our project. It's myself and my father that work together. We started it together and we run the company together. We create the art together. We do everything. And so we're just two people Certainly we have some people that come onto the team to help, and that's always amazing. But primarily it's just two of us. And we take turns carrying the chair and the tripod and the camera gear. And hopefully we create nice pictures with them. We turn those into photo books, exhibitions, large scale installations at Toronto Airport, for example. That's kind of our cornerstone gallery. We have some very large installations of our photographs at the airport, which happens to be a particularly great venue for this message. The message of the chair is that you are the director of your life. And so when you see it in all these amazing places, some might call it you more than others, but the message is the same, and it's for everybody. It's that you are invited to take your seat, and sometimes even you're challenged to take your seat and to be the director of your life. And so to make good choices. We have three main pillars that we talk about, and that's one people, one planet, and one life. One people means, you know, how you treat your neighbors, how you treat, and that's neighbors by, you know, the broader two definitions, you know, your fellow humans. You're the director of those choices, right? One planet, we do have quite a strong environmental message. We've been lucky to work with organizations like WWF, for example, in sharing that message. You're the director of many choices that affect, you know, the health of this planet and the health of it for future generations. Make good choices, right? And then one life is the more personal, ambitious, motivational side. Say, you know, live with intention and direct your life the way that you want to, you know, as much as you're able to. And I would think that, I believe that for most people, you know, the amount that you're able to is actually greater than in at first glance. And so hopefully when you see a photograph in a book or a show, you're reminded of that power that you have as a director of your life.
I love it. I'm like smiling, like listening to this, because yeah, and honestly, the photos are obviously, I'm lucky enough to have a lecture one of your books, and we got to reach them in Berlin, and they're honestly just amazing.
But
the idea of this red director's chair, that is it always red as well?
It's it's always a red and white chair. It just happens to general,
like,
yeah, exactly.
Great, and yeah, it really just got me thinking how. Just the authentic storytelling of this concept was just fantastic. And then you've explained, obviously, like more for people, guys. It just makes so much sense. Like, I just...
Well, thank you so much. What I really like about it is that people are familiar with photography. You know, photography is an art form that people see all day long. But we're able to give it a bit of a twist and bring an unexpected element to it. So hopefully on their own, if you see a picture of a jungle, or, you know, we were recently in Cairo with the pyramids in Giza. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people have seen many photos of the pyramids before, but not with the director's chair in front of them as his invitation. And so it really does start a conversation about what's that doing there, right? So there are some layers to it. If you're in the airport and you walk by and you're in a bit of a rush, you might just see a beautiful photograph and you might not notice it, depending on the picture. Sometimes the chair is quite prominent. Sometimes it's more hidden and you have to search for it, like where's Waldo or where's Wally? You know, and if you see it, then you do kind of have to ask, you know, what's up with the chair? Why is the chair in the jungle? You know, and then that invites a conversation in a way that we hope to make it as, you know, appeal to as large of an audience as we can. And it really is for everybody. Mm-hmm. And that makes it really fun. And to get to see people's reaction once they realize, oh, wait a minute, it's in every picture, you know, it's every single one in an exhibition. Maybe we'll have 40 or 50 photos in a show. And that those around the world. So I feel more comfortable saying that it's, you know, pretty universal experience that I got into seeing among the audiences. This year so far, we've had shows in the Netherlands, Istanbul, Kuwait, and I'm on the way now to Beijing for a big show. It's only May. So I feel very lucky to get to see people's reactions all the time. And, you know, whether it's a child or a grandparent or a monk or a business person, you know, it's once they hear the message of the chair and they start looking for it in all the pictures, you know, especially with some people more than others, it's really powerful to see how it clicks with them. And it doesn't really matter where in life it finds you, but sometimes that message of the chair can be really strong for people. And it's such an honor to get to share that message with them.
It's funny though, because I'm thinking, imagine you're going through the airport and you are surrounded a lot of the time by, as the airport being one example, but yeah, you're wandering through, and obviously there are all beautiful images of the destinations you can fly to, that you are riding to, and it's really lovely. But I just love the idea of this interactive, like, piece making me think while I'm going from that kind of slightly monotonous, dare I say, journey of the airport. You know, imagine you're just like 5 a.m. there, and then all of a sudden you just, they're going on the conveyor belt towards your gate, and then you just see this. Great. It just sort of stops you in your tracks, and it's just a really good, again, like just that design your life. If you think about, okay, but what is this? Like, it's just great. What was the process? Like, what was there a creative process for you in coming up with a director's chair in the middle of a random place? Like, was there a process?
Yeah. I think the first process was my dad and I deciding what we wanted to do together. Yeah. You know, we've always had a very strong relationship and wanted to build something together. It was certainly not a given that it was going to be photography at all or art at all, right? So there were definitely big picture conversations about what's the best thing to do together. We wanted to have an impact in a big way. And I'm grateful that we had the faith in ourselves. Neither of us are trained artists or artists before. They said, you know what, I think that we could probably figure out photography. And if we do it in the right way, and that would be the secondary conversation about, you know, okay, if we're going to do photography, then what's it look like? You know, I'm glad we had the faith in ourselves to pull it off and to go for it. Especially with the chair being the symbol of our project, the first few photo shoots without any evidence of any global exhibitions or, you know, airport installations or books to show for it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy.
Yes.
It benefits now from having a lot of evidence that, oh, it's actually, you know, it can work. And I'm grateful now that we have that kind of momentum. At the beginning, you know, the idea is as crazy as ever. And how we picked the chair in particular, we were looking for something that was just portable enough that we could do it. You physically can bring it up to the top of a mountain, or, you know, carry it deep into the woods, or carry it around in, you know, Casablanca. That wasn't going to obstruct too much the ongoing activity. So if we put it in the Grand Mosque of Kuwait, for example, as we did recently, it shouldn't disturb too much what's going on. You know, it is out of place, but it's not going to affect too much around it. And so some of my favorite photographs that we have, it's a scene of daily life, you know, so it could be a streetscape in Bangkok, and you'll look for it. Oh, there is the chair there, but the chair itself is actually not impacting too much the image. And so you get a much more authentic view while still playing this kind of game with the viewer, where for them, it is much more than just a nice streetscape of Bangkok or a beautiful photo inside a Grand Mosque. So it needs to be portable enough that it was possible, but difficult enough that people are kind of scratching their heads a little bit about, is it really the same? You know, you've really got it there. It's not Photoshopped. It needs to be difficult. And thankfully, I think we struck a good balance. The chair weighs 5 or 6 kilograms. You know, it's like 10 or 11 pounds. And, you know, that's substantial. And depending on where you're going, it can feel more and more substantial. And we needed a symbol. We've seen some interesting campaigns before. They tend to be advertising campaigns or some art projects, but the symbols, like the recurring object, can feel a bit random. And so we like the idea of a recurring theme, a recurring symbol, but we wanted to have a message. And so I think combining those two, we had a couple of brainstorms and eventually came upon the director's chair idea. And then we said, okay, yes, it sounds crazy, but let's give it a shot. And we did some proof of concept work, like a couple of quick trips, totally self-organized, you know, self-funded. And they were good. You know, some of those photos actually still hold up. Obviously, our vision has shifted over time. It's been about 7 or 8 years now of taking these photographs of the chair. But I look at some of the earliest pictures, and some of them do still hold up really well.
Love that. Like, which ones? Like, a couple?
So we went to the Grand Mosque of Abu Dhabi, and we snuck the chair in.
Wow.
And I would love to go back and try again. But if we never go back, I'm very proud of those photos. We put those in a photo book. The photo book you saw in Berlin, actually, among those were some pictures of the chair in Abu Dhabi. And they're great. Somehow they worked. We've had a chance one or two times. So we went to Korea for a very short trip, and the weather wasn't good. And we didn't quite know yet how it needs to happen, like to put the chair in position and then, you know, step back and take the picture. We weren't as well versed in at that time, so Korea didn't work as well. So we went back to Korea a couple of years ago, and I feel very proud now of the pictures that we have in Korea. So there is, you know, there are also times where there's a big comparison between what was taken. Didn't work out so great as a combination of bad luck and just not quite ready for it. And then newer work in the case of Korea, we had to go back, and it was just amazing, the difference.
In general, how do you pick your vacations as well? Or like,
And obviously now it helps that you've got people who want, who actually want to bring you to places. But in the beginning, they're just like, how did you go about picking the locations?
Yes, it's a nice mix. Even now, it's still a pretty good mix. So we do have a lot of clients. We work with tourism boards quite often. We work with embassies fairly often as well. People want the chair's journey to continue to their country, right? So they want to see the chair's journey through their place. And then they'll put on a show. And certainly with the invitational aspect of the chair for tourism board, that aligns quite well with their strategy too. In addition to client projects like that, we get to invest ourselves, you know, invest our own time and money into projects that we hope will pay off down the road, right? Separate from any client work, we do our own independent books and shows fairly often. And it's our mission to eventually reach every country in the world and to bring this chair really on as global as possible, the journey. We're so far, we're at 40 countries. I'd say a little more than half of that would be, you know, client work where we've been asked to come or commissioned to do a project in that place. And then, you know, the others are ones where we say, well, we're on our way or it's nearby, or we just feel drawn enough to the place that we want to see for ourselves, you know, what that project would look like. So to make it more practical, I'm on my way to China on tomorrow because we have a big project there that we're celebrating with a book launch and an exhibition launch. We've been shooting in Beijing for 4 months, actually, a huge project. And then this will be the final chapter where we're launching it to the public. On the way to China from Toronto, there are many places. And so I'm actually flying first to Uzbekistan, and then I'll stop for a road trip in Kazakhstan. And then eventually I will make it to China. We don't have clients in Central Asia right now, you know, those two countries. But as part of our global story, it's an important region of the world. Every country, every place has, you know, deeply fascinating stories that if we can tell any of them, I'd be thrilled. So yeah, I hope that answers a little bit. It's a mix of our own personal choices and then, you know, client work. And thankfully, we're able to pick and choose a little bit among the clients that we have said no to a few people who are just not ready for it yet or not quite sure if that's the right partner to make it happen in as authentic of a way as possible. And how we pick the personal ones, it could be a particular festival or a building, you know, or one photo that we're really saying, like, wow, you know, if we want to tell a global story, how could you not include the pyramids of Giza, right? Yeah. So we said, let's go to Cairo. We were in the Middle East. Cairo is not so far away. And so we said, you know what? It's been on our list for a long time to include ancient wonders of the world in our project. Let's try to get our chair in front of the pyramids. And we made it happen, thankfully. Or it could, you know, it could be a festival. It could be a special event. It could just be a personal connection, right? I went to Taiwan because I was nearby and I had friends there that were telling me all about Taiwan and these incredible stories they were telling me. And I said, I'm convinced, you know, let's go. Let's make it happen. Let's make a project happen. And it was a quick project, but I look at his photos and I'm proud of them. And I hope that my friends in Taiwan are equally proud to say, yeah, you know, this is real. You know, this is authentically Taiwan, or this is authentically fill in the blank.
Well, I love that you mentioned that because I think like the people who are maybe in, I know you don't consider yourself a content creator necessarily, but it, you know, people who are in travel or travel marketing or whatever it is, I think that's such, you touched on such a good point about creating authentic stories and going places that resonate with you. Because ultimately, if it has a resonance with you and who you are as a person and like the places that are on your list and the cultures you love to be around, then it's going to come through in your work. That is ultimately going to come through, whether you think about it or not, because you have this extra layer of, well, for one, wanting to be there, quite frankly. I think we're in this interesting time now where authentic storytelling, authentic marketing, authentic anything is going to start being wanted. And that's where I love what you're doing, because again, it's an authentic take on travel ultimately, right? It's like when you had influencers or whatever, like, you know, 5, 10 years ago, people went to that place because that person said that, because it was, there were like these people next door that were your friend telling you to go places. And then now I feel like we're diving even further, deeper into that now with our own takes. That's what I ask, because I think it's quite easy to get caught up in what seems to be popular at the time, or like who's got money to spend on a strategy, and like there's nothing that, of course. But ultimately, what's really going to resonate, I think, with people still is that authentic take.
For sure. I'd say the only asterisk I'd put on that is that sometimes and I can speak from experience, I've been very surprised at the places that I like being, you know? So I suppose it's not disrespectful to say, you know, I can name a couple of places that I took the projects not because I knew I was going to like it and that therefore I'd be able to tell a more authentic story from that place, but because I'm trying to be as open-minded as possible to say, you know what, I don't know enough about it to make a judgment yet. Every place has fascinating things. Every place has good people. Every place has a story, and often many, many stories to share. So the only asterisk is to say, maybe be a little more open-minded about what you'll find interesting. If you know already what you like, what if you push it a little more and then you might be surprised? And I've certainly been surprised by a few places.
And then what works for one person might not necessarily work for you, or vice versa. Like, what might work but for you may not work for the next person, but ultimately it's your experience. Again, that comes through.
Exactly. Yeah. And on the content creation side, on the authenticity, it's one of those things that is a great strategy if you're a brand or you're a content creator. To be authentic is actually easier than people think. Yeah, just do it. But it is a great strategy, especially right now. I think people are very attuned to inauthenticity, and we can spot it very quickly. And I think brands tend to underestimate how quickly it can be spotted. And once it's spotted, most people, I think, ignore it. That project, no matter how much funding you put behind it, how much hype it has, it will just fall flat if it's inauthentic. What we've been really honored by is that a lot of our clients, we're able to tell our clients, we're going to do this our way. You know, we're obviously very grateful to be brought to your country or to your destination and to be asked to do a project, but it's our project. And the clients that we love working with the most, you know, they all say yes. And they'll say, of course, continue, do your work. But the projects we like the most are the ones where the client actually recognizes it's because of that they're hiring us. You know, they want a third party view of their place. Mm-hmm. They want to see the perspective. They want to see an authentic perspective from you, the content creator, right? Those are the best clients that understand that's actually the whole point. And they're not trying to influence you and mold your project to ultimately make an ad campaign. You know, that should be considered a totally separate exercise. And if you're in the content creator space, or your vision and your personality is a big part of your work, it has to be protected.
And it's how you build a legacy, ultimately, as well. I feel like that's how you stay in the game. Yeah.
It's resilience, because there's only one you.
You know,
if you're doing, I guess, you eventually get to a point where people will try to start copying you. That would be, you know, quite flattering. But ultimately, even then, it's still only you that can bring that project to life in your way. If you're going to be willing to get, you know, too shaped by the person funding it or the people that are making it happen, that means you're replaceable.
Mm-hmm. And if you're always looking for answers in a way outside of yourself, or like what trends are happening, or what are other people doing, like what if you're always kind of looking for the answers outside of yourself, as opposed to say,
exactly.
We literally just before this, we're talking a bit about like taking time out to just work on your business and just be in a deep focus state. If you can't find that space and that the answers within yourself as well, whether it's business, personal, whatever, you are going to struggle, I feel, from a longevity perspective. Because
yeah, exactly.
Was relying on other people. Leave your way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not even just from a business perspective that you might struggle. It's just personally, you'll get drained. You know, if you're not able to be as authentic to yourself as you can and push through, you know, in the moments where you need to feel you're pushing through, that's hopefully coming from within yourself. And otherwise, you're going to run out of fuel pretty fast. I'd worry for a lot of people.
Well. Adding on to that, we kind of covered bits and pieces already, but like, is there anything that I feel like a lot of people talk about that when you start a business or you start a project or that whatever, and then you see the end result of certain thing, but right. You don't talk as much in the middle when you're building, or like when you are just not operating at the like the neutral level, but it's just that kind of space in between. Like, is there anything that I'm calling the middle? Love another like term for it, but is there anything in the middle that you think doesn't get talked about enough?
Yeah, I think so. I guess the first thing that comes to mind is that it's enjoyable. You know, I think a lot of people, they say, well, the middle is that part between, you know, when I had the idea and my end game. And the end game is that's when I'm really going to enjoy it. That's when I'll get rich, or that's when I'll live on the beach, or that's when, you know, whatever your end game is. wonderful. I think it's great to have a vision for what you want to come in the future. But don't forget that the middle's probably going to be the biggest part. And therefore, hopefully you can make it as enjoyable as possible in your circles. That's in our circles. That happens to me. It's probably remote many times, not necessarily always, but many times. But just generally speaking, you should be enjoying what you're doing if you're going to do something entrepreneurial, right? Otherwise, there are many cons to being entrepreneurial and many perks to being in a different path. If you're not enjoying it and you're just kind of waiting, it's like waiting for the weekend, right? Like you don't want to just always be waiting for the weekend. You're going to miss a lot of your life in that middle section. That would be the first thing.
I think that's it. I think if I think about like content, how we talk about business in general, because it's not even like the beginning and the end of a project, but when it comes to creative business, you know, you friends have talked about your remote life and that being overwhelming. But I think also when, especially in creative businesses, people don't quite understand the amount of work that does go into, you know, they see the end result, or they'll see like you're jetting off around the world, as it were, and they don't necessarily see the actual effort that goes into these things. And that's from a project perspective, so the shorter projects perhaps, but then also from a business, how do you keep the middle of the business? Say for example, it was from conception to maybe selling off the business, or, you know, giving it whatever that happens to be. How do you keep that space in between? Because it's great to hustle, for example, when you're first stepping out and you're like, I'm not going to sleep, I'm going to work. And then we've talked about burnout already, but you're going to burn out. You can't just hustle. Yeah.
There's this expression I've been hearing a lot lately of a phrase where it's like, I'm just going to work so hard, just slide a pizza under the door. I'm going to work through the night. It's like, it represents this vision that people have of, it's kind of this archetypal vision that people have of hard work nowadays. Mm-hmm. I work really hard. I think a lot of people work really hard. That's one way of working hard. You know, the late nights and, you know, no sleep, Adderall fueled, pizzas under the door kind of lifestyle. That's a very particular vision, though, of hard work and of a project. I guess I understand some aspects, kind of like these self-sacrificial aspects and, you know, of why it can be appealing to some people. But I think it's overrepresented as far as, you know, our portrayals of hard work or of building something. It doesn't have to be that you're, you know, alone in your hovel eating pizzas off, you know, only, right? And believe it or not, you can work hard in other ways. Because, and those people are doing it because they're waiting for that big payoff. They're waiting for the company to be sold or for, you know, the big payday. And for the number of people for those who will be successful down that path, I suppose they might say it's worth it. But there are a lot of other people that will try to emulate that path. Path sucks, and you're not guaranteed that payout, and that would be a very frustrating realization to have put so much energy in, not enjoying it really, and to find that the thing you were waiting for at the end might not come. But meanwhile, there are alternative paths where the path itself is actually very enjoyable, whether the payout comes down the road or not.
And I slightly like this concept, and you may agree, but this concept of having an authentic storytelling of an authentic concept is almost crucial to a business, because you've got to love it even on the day when you don't want to get up. It's got to resonate even to 1%, you know. So I feel like that could be a much more sustainable way to business. I mean, I feel like we need to talk about those like not so exciting moments where it may look like there's not as much going on perhaps, but it the bit that makes sure that we're like the difference between 5 months versus 5 years or 50 years in business or whatever.
I think that in the remote life space, there tends to be a mixing up of the order of things. You know, it's kind of like, I will just do any job I can that lets me work on the beach. You know, it's these pictures of people with their laptops on the beach, which is highly impractical, by the way, but, or by the pool or in a very noisy cafe. Maybe that's also, it seems to be very popular to work in like a really noisy cafe. Okay. Like, yeah, it looks really cool. But I would hope that more people can say, you know, what's my calling? What's this authentic voice that I have? What is my purpose that I can share with the world? And then is there a way that I can do it in cool places, which may or may not include the beach? You know, but there's kind of this, you're trying to force fit because you know how you'd like to do something, but you don't yet know why. I think it's very easy, and this ties as well into trends and consumerism, it's very easy to think about how you're going to do it. What backpack do you need and which cool cafe is calling to you in, you know, in Rome. But the why is much more important, especially when things are getting more difficult. And it's also much more related to you. And I promise you the backpack doesn't matter. Right? I don't make a lot of promises. I don't try to be absolute about anything in life too often, but the backpack doesn't matter. And the gear doesn't matter nearly as much, but that's what looks cool online and, you know, tends to be a distraction, I think, a lot of times.
You were briefly mentioned about beaching and whatnot. I think what we need to talk about just quickly a little bit about how you recharge and how you also kind of pick that creativity up too, because that's another thing. It's not just something you can kind of switch on and off sometimes. So how do you creatively take care of the middle as well?
Yeah, I think that I'm lucky that I'm surrounded by a lot of friends in a lot of places who are also creative. And so if I'm feeling a little low on that energy, they might be having a show that week, you know, and it's certainly not limited to photography. It's, you know, just more generally, when we were in Berlin, for example, when we met, it's a draining week. That's a really tough week, ITB. At the end of the week, I'm really feeling, wow, that was a lot of energy, you know, expelled. Thankfully, my friend there says, oh, well, we're having a friend's concert tonight. Why don't you come to the show? And as an example of like perfect timing, perfect situation, I go to the show and all of a sudden I'm re-inspired with this creative energy. You go, oh, all right, you know, that's the point, you know, and having those kinds of like refueling stops fairly frequently is really helpful. And not relying on myself I'm really low on creativity. I need to find more creativity to find more creativity. Well, no, I can find it from other people. Right. And that can be something, you know, in person, like going to a show, or it can just be, I have certain art books that I look at fairly often if I'm feeling a need to be replenished creatively. Go to a museum, you know, read a poem that you like or find a new one. And I think that if you start tuning into just how much creativity is surrounding us, and it's not just in the arts, right? If you see a beautiful building around you, it took a whole team of people, very creative, hardworking people to pull that off, right? It's easier to see in the arts when you read a poem or see a masterpiece, but everything was created, you know, around us, but by dedicated teams. And so trying to tune into that when I'm not feeling it so much in myself, I find really helps to get that replenishment.
We've sort of touched upon this a couple of times, but I'd be curious to know, just to wrap things up, what does mindful content mean to you? Like, what does it mean to be a mindful creator or creative to you?
Yeah, that is the one of the top questions I think about all the time, especially as, you know, clients get more exciting and budgets start to get a bit bigger. It's really tough. I asked that question to Chris Burkard, the photographer. He had a show in Toronto one time, and I asked him pretty much a very similar question, because I was impressed by the fact that from his earliest photographs to his newest work, which happens to be sponsored by Jeep or by, you know, Visit Iceland or whatever it is, like these, you know, big brands with, you know, or Sony cameras is his big sponsor, you know, huge budgets. How do you stay mindful to yourself? And I think you owe a lot to your audience to be mindful when people are waving dollars around or, you know, different projects are calling to you. It's really tough. I thought his answer was good. He was saying that he has a few key people in his life, in his case, his wife and a couple of friends that are on his team that he relies on to call him out, and that he'll check in with every now and then. I'm thinking about this project and I'm trying to figure out the way to go with it. And he really relies on them, because sometimes, you know, to be mindful is a great goal. It really is. But I don't always trust myself to be able to do it entirely by my own means. And so I would agree with Chris Burkard in that case about having people around you to help you and to keep you in check, especially if you're in that. Hopefully it will come when you're still making a decision, and hopefully it doesn't come after and they're like, oh, you know, that project, that wasn't a very mindful project, or that piece of content you put out wasn't mindful. Hopefully you can catch yourself, or your friends can catch you before. Certainly they don't need to be friends, actually. I think sometimes it's harder for friends to do it, but I would say, you know, people that you trust to help you with that, which involves, you know, inherently asking questions about it to yourself first, and then to ask people for help if you're not clear on it. So I find myself asking questions about the content I'm putting out all the time, literally multiple times a day. And thankfully I'm able to trust myself that once I've made the decision and said, this project is worth doing, this is a really, you know, authentically me it's going to be a mindful piece of content. I can go full steam ahead and I don't have to ask so many questions after that. But there are, it's a long reflective stage before signing on to something, because it's not just strategy. It's beyond that. It's like, yes, it is strategically important to be mindful and authentic with everything you're putting out, of course, but it's like on the deepest personal level of fulfillment and satisfaction and, you know, pride in what you're doing.
Yeah.
I just don't want to take the risk. And so I'd so much rather slow it down and really ask a lot of questions about it. Be calling on friends to answer those if you're not feeling you're getting a clear enough answer on your own.
I think that's another good talking about. It's something that comes up a lot on the podcast, but it's something I think that, especially in the travel space, is an important thing to be mindful of. It's important to be mindful as well, because ultimately you're going into spaces that aren't necessarily your own. And
yeah,
it's important to think about, not just from a personal perspective, not just from an individual business perspective, but also what impact you're leaving potentially. Like, what are you...
100%. If I put a picture out and at the airport, for example, it's 50 million people a year or more that see our photographs. It really matters, A, what I'm showing, and then B, how I'm showing it. Because I'd like to think, hopefully for good, but certainly if I do it wrong, will be for bad. You know, it will have an impact on those places. And so we're always working with local partners everywhere we go to ensure that the stories that we're sharing are, you know, accurate and authentic and good to share. Because you don't know when you put something out into the world who's going to come across it later, or how many people are going to come across it later. And, you know, it's easy to say, oh, it's just one post, you know, I'm just going to move this thing, or, you know, do this disrespectful thing, and because it looks better, or it makes the project look better. But whether you have a massive audience or not, I think it's just too risky, and it's also blatantly disrespectful to the place. So yeah, and then there are deeper conversations I have a lot with anyone in the visual arts about Photoshop is like a constant debate, right? And that the difference between reality as it is and reality as we perceive it, you know? So if there's a piece of trash on the ground, it's possible you actually don't perceive it, even though in reality it's there. And therefore you don't perceive it. Am I allowed to like Photoshop it out? And of course, then that's just like a very small little, like, you know, a spot on the ground, but that can apply to much more. And you'll notice many photographers there's a whole spectrum of what they consider to be what they saw versus reality. And the relationship between those two obviously can go back and forth. And I think those are really important questions. I think they tend to be considered just artistic questions, you know, question of artistic direction. But I think they're much deeper than that.
Well, and then let's not even get started with AI. Awful.
No, I'm trying not to, because yeah, that's this whole other world. And yeah, I mean, I'm thankfully not yet, but I'm waiting for any minute now. I'll get an email of somebody saying, can't we just do this with the computer? Yeah, which means a resounding no, of course not. But I understand the question, you know, and to be fair, to try to steel man that argument, it would be to say, if the important thing is the message, in my case, the director's chair message about, you know, this chair in beautiful places as an invitation for you to think deeper about your life and how you're directing it, does it fundamentally matter whether that's an artificial image or not? I'd be willing to have, I actually think there's maybe more of a conversation there than not. You know, for now, I can guarantee that every photo we ever taken, and for this project, every photo we ever will be authentic. And I'd be packing this chair in my suitcase today, getting ready to take it on another big trip. But I understand that there's room there for discussion, I think, about what is the goal, and if there's an easier way to do the goal. Okay. Yeah, we can talk about it. But for now, no.
But now pack up that bag and like, let's...
Yeah, exactly. For now, I think that actually doing it is worth it in itself. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, I think that's a really good note to end on. I have one final question though.
Please, yeah.
Home is where?
Well, you've caught me at a tough time in the middle of a move, because I wish I knew. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't think, okay, top of my head, home is where my laptop is. Home is my laptop. Home is my laptop. Home is, you know, home is Adobe Lightroom for me. the software I use for photography a lot of the time. Home is flexible. And I feel that at sometimes I need my home to be a group of friends, sometimes strangers at a cool cafe in Berlin, you know? And sometimes it's just, it is, maybe always it is internal. I'm still working on feeling that always, but I'm willing for now to say that yeah, home is very flexible. And I think even all those different things that it can be, they still point inwards if you look closer.
Amazing. It's amazing to chat again, Spencer. And I can't wait to see what you guys get up to next. I'm so jealous.
Thank you so much. No, I'll make sure I send you some photos from Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, China, and Istanbul in the next run over the next 5 or 6 weeks.
Can't wait.
Thank you so much. This has been really fun. This is really great. And I listen to podcasts fairly often and I love it. So what the things you talk about are very much in line with what we're talking about all the time. So I'm glad to be here. It's really, really great.
Thank you. I caught that on the audio. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Remote Life, and thank you, Spencer, for taking the time to speak with us. You can find links to his work and profiles below. Thank you so much again for listening, and we can't wait to remote work with you again soon.